This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. It's February 10th, episode 846, brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, Horse World.
It's Monday.
Monday is my favorite time of year.
This is Horses in the Morning with your lovable hosts, Jamie Jennings.
I am the queen. You listen to me.
I'm sorry that people are so jealous of me, but I can't help it that I'm popular.
Glenn the Geek.
You look especially radiant today, Your Grace.
I'm going to do a terrific show today because I'm good enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Happy Monday.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us on this Monday morning. We appreciate you being here, and our best to everybody in the middle of the country in the Northeast. Last week, they had a snowstorm at the beginning of the week. Then they had a big ice storm that knocked out power everywhere, and then another snowstorm over the weekend, and they're predicting more this week. I know that several of our listeners, Colleen and Hope and Lorraine and Jen, all were without power for a period of time last week. Hope was 6 days without power all around the Chester County, that eastern part of Pennsylvania. She said it looks like a war. Hope said 6 days without power. It looks like a war zone. Thank God for generators, but many are not that lucky. It's tough getting water for the horses. Colleen said the same thing. She said, horses and water, that's always the tough part, is you need power to run the pumps. So it's been tough up in the Northeast. I saw pictures, and it was just trees down everywhere. And, of course, we can relate to that, having lived in Lexington through some major ice storms. So
our
best to everybody up there.
These people would have just watched the Olympics last night. They actually had a little segment on horses that are in Russia. And the natives were talking about, and I didn't catch it. You see horses out of the corner of your eye, and you immediately turn around and look. And the native people that own these horses were talking about how the horses have learned to just eat snow. So if our horses would just toughen up a little bit, watch a little Olympics, start to figure it out. My God, learn to eat snow, people. Why do we have to carry water?
You know, there have been a few times in the winter that I wish they eat snow. Let me tell you, carrying water through the snow drifts and everything's frozen. Oh, what a nightmare. But anyway, we hope for that spring comes for you people, because you certainly have had a tough one this year. A really tough one.
Yes. Yes.
Well, Jennifer, we have some fun stuff planned for today.
On today's Omega Alpha Monday edition, after the outpouring of weekend adventure stories from our co-host, our favorite hunter-jumper helper is stopping by in the form of Diane Little, this time to cover legwear for hunters. And after the break, Jamie and Glenn will take one for the team, along with Kat from Eat Your Tart Out and her chocolate-tasting challenge. And rounding out our Monday adventure, the wacky world of horses puts our lash muscles through their warm-up routine. So stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Hey, what other job can you go to where they require to eat chocolate? That's a pretty good deal.
You know, it's 7 in the morning here. I'm really not excited about this.
Oh, there's only 9 of them that we have to taste, Jamie. Only 9. So you'll be good.
That's exciting.
Well, you got baby Luke there. Have him taste some. I'm sure that, he'll be bouncing off the walls by the end of the day with that.
Yeah, that sounds fun. All our listeners, my husband went to work at 4 a.m., so we are going to be part Horse Radio Network, part daycare today. Sorry about it, but that's the way it rolls.
Well, my daily whinny goes out to Blackjack, the longest-serving police horse in St. Paul, Minnesota history. He has been 14 years with the department, and they said he never once called in sick or missed a day of work. And he's an 18-year-old that will return to his owners who had donated him to the police department all those years ago. He'll live out his remaining years in a pasture. And his officer, Hank Price, will be reassigned to a new horse. There are five horses in the police department. One has served 12 years, 10 years or less. So they keep him for a good long time. Blackjack, who is a mix of Arabian, Morgan, and Holsteiner, was said to be
who
a mischievous.
That? Sorry. I was like, oh, this sounds like a good idea.
Let's. What is that? A Ray Moore Steiner. An Ray Moore Steiner.
That's beautiful.
They said he was a mischievous horse. Price said he's a real character. If you had a rookie rider on his back, he would take advantage of it. He might rear up and spin around, but he's always been kind of flashy and likes to dance and prance. So there you go. I'm sure they just put the rookies on him just to see him get dumped. I'm sure they did that. You know they did that. But he's a
That's
good
cool.
guy. He's retiring. So congratulations to Blackjack on his retirement. Hope he gets lots of alfalfa and they move into Florida because St. Paul's in Minnesota. Just saying.
Yeah, that's Well, we had talked about this race, and it was happening this weekend. A horse named Groupie Doll was going to run in the Hurricane Birdie Stakes, a $200,000 handicap race at Gulfstream Park down in Florida. Well, six-year-old Groupie Doll, the name sounds familiar because she won the Eclipse Award 2012 and 2013 for Outstanding Female Sprinter. She sold, and we did this news story, she sold to a woman that exclusively does breeding named Mandy Pope for $3.1 million at the Keeneland November sale. Well, you know, she's a breeder, and she could have just gone, okay, we're taking her to the breeding shed, we're going to retire her. You know, she was like, you know, she's in good shape, she likes to run, we're just going to keep running her just once or twice more, and we'll see what happens. Well, she ran her in what was to be, what they had said was going to be her final race this weekend down at Gulfstream. And let's go ahead and take a listen to it.
They're racing in the That's Hurricane Birdie, and Groupie Doll had a slow start. She is off last. Groupie Doll is last early. Jamaican Smoke is going out to take the early lead. On the outside, Five-Star Mama away running in second position. Distortion is third. Wildcat Lily follows fourth by 2.5 lengths. Then Heart Stealer and My Due Process. And Groupie Doll is very slow to get going early. She's 10 lengths off the lead as they approach the half-mile pole. That first quarter was 22-1. And it is Jamaican Smoke on top. Now the leader by a neck. Five-Star Mama second. Wildcat Lily goes up on the outside. Then Distortion, Heart Stealer, followed by an I Do Process, and Groupie Doll is still last. She's closer now. She's 5 lengths off the lead. She's beginning to move up on the far outside, and here comes Groupie Doll now, still with work to do as they come toward the top of the stretch. Five-Star Mama is the leader. Groupie Doll is 5 wide. She's on the far outside. Wildcat Lily is next, and they're into the stretch, and there goes Groupie Doll. And Rajiv Mirage lets her loose one last time, and look at her take off. She was dead last up the backstretch, but Groupie Doll goes out in glory at Gulfstream. She's won the Hurricane Birdie by...
There you go. That was and that race was incredible when you saw the backstretch. I mean, they were like 5 wide. It was neat
she
race.
She finished 6 lengths ahead is what you didn't hear in that because she cut it off. But, oh, my gosh, it was amazing. I was like, oh, no, her last race, and she's in dead last by 10 lengths. And it was so Zenyatta-esque to have her come around that home stretch, the final turn, and just it was like everybody else stopped. And they said, go ahead. Here you go. So she just took off galloping, and it was a beautiful thing. So now she will be retired, and she's going to be bred to Tappet. So, I mean, as soon as they can, I would imagine. So she'll have a foal next year. So congratulations to Mandy Pope and Mandy. Go ahead.
Do you think Mrs. Pope, who just paid $3 million, was having a heart attack on the backstretch, knowing or thinking that her horse might come in last? And
it's like, Robbie, look, don't fall off.
That wouldn't look real good, would it? We're going to take her out to breed now.
I just, what would suck is that if she, you know, there's such a gamble that she could get hurt. You pay $3.1 million for a racehorse and a breeding horse, and then you run it and something happens. And so she says that she was in tears. She was very excited. She says, I'm so happy for everyone, the fans. It's just so wonderful. I was worried when she was so far behind, but they were telling me, don't worry about it. It was just so wonderful and amazing. So congratulations to them. It could have gone, you know, she could have just retired her, and to let the fans kind of have one more race, it was awesome. I mean, the mare's 6 years old. They're just like, let's keep going.
I want to know about the owner. I want to know what the young adulthood was like for the owner of Jamaican Smoke. Curious.
Yeah. Who knows why that horse was named that? He went to Jamaica, smoked it up. Well, you know, you guys, I had an amazing weekend, and I have to tell you about it because, you know, between my horses being hurt, dealing with the vet and farrier fighting with each other, and having a newborn at home or an infant at home, I was scheduled to go to a cross-country clinic this weekend. The horse is hurt, so I just had to get out of the house. And my brother-in-law and sister-in-law just had a new baby, and they live in Los Angeles, which is about 5.5 hours away. So I said to Chad, I said, why don't we just go visit your family and go see the new baby, since he had Friday off. And he's like, good idea. So we left Thursday night to go to Los Angeles, and we took this loud little child with us. So we went to Los Angeles and visited on Friday, and Saturday the plan was we're going to Santa Anita. Wow. We went to Santa Anita to visit before the Zenyatta statue was up, and when there was nobody there because it was no racing, and the guy was nice enough to let me in, and because I was like, please let me in. But this time there was racing going on, and it was what you know, you think you like Keeneland. You think you've been somewhere when you've been to Keeneland. I'm telling you, Jennifer, I almost want to say there's nothing like Santa Anita. It was better. Chad actually said himself, it's better than Keeneland. It was
one of the racing hackles.
What makes it better? What makes it better?
It was, first of all, when you walk in, it kind of seems like old tiny Hollywood with the signs and the tote boards everywhere. And the second you walk in, you're in the paddock area, and the horses are walking around, and they're walking around statues of John Henry, of Seabiscuit, of Zenyatta. Those are the statues that are out in the paddock. The horses that all of us know and love are sitting right out there, along with giant bronze jockeys that you would know, like Bill Hardtack, and all the jockeys from like back in the day. And George Wolf is the first statue that you see when you go in there. When you walk in, it is huge. You know where Keeneland just has the like up above seating?
Yes.
Santa Anita's like, all up there is just different buildings. It's just all buildings, and you can go to – it's all different restaurants. We ended up sitting in a restaurant that overlooked the track, and it didn't cost any extra money. You just had to spend $10, and, of course, you spend that on food. So we had, like, a waiter serving us while we were watching the races, and there was a own little betting window in the little restaurant. It was just so fun. People were having birthday parties, and there was just all sorts of – everybody was just happy. And it seems like every employee of Santa Anita is super friendly and super nice. They must go to, like, Disney training because everybody was so awesome. We just had such a great experience. And just to be there, and there's pictures all over the insides of the horses. Seabiscuit weighs very heavy at Santa Anita, as he should. And just to be there and see all that is really, really, really special, and, you know, to be a horse lover like all of us are. So it was really neat, and I must say, I did a little gambling, Glenn.
Yeah,
I did a little
gambling. You put down $2 here or there.
Well, you know, I've been watching that TV show Horse Players, which is about gambling.
So you're a handicapper now?
So now I'm an official handicapper, and I didn't even buy the regular program. Oh, no. This right here, my friends, is the daily racing form. I went all in and spent the $5 and got the daily racing form. And even the guy at the window, when I went to, I was like, no, I'll have a daily racing form. He goes, you do know that you have to know how to read these to bet. And I said,
I
yes,
can't even read the
you.
Regular one.
Where it says, number four. You know, like, it was ridiculous. So I'm like, yes, I know how to read it. Thank you. And he hands it to me, and of course, it's like a lot more complicated than I would have ever imagined. But I knew what a lot of this stuff were because I watched a lot of Frankie's videos, you know, where his daily racing terms, Frankie Lovato's daily yes. racing terms, and Horse Players. So I'm like a freaking expert now, let me tell you. And I was feeling pretty good. We got there after the first race, so I'm like, I'm ready to bet the second race. I'm like, that's it. Second race is mine. I'm like, give me some space. I need to sit down, and I need to study. So I start studying, and I'm like, that's it. I like this trifecta. I like a trifecta. Chad's like, you sure you want to bet a trifecta? And I'm like, I like these three horses. This is how it's going to be. Bet the three horses. Boom.
You boxed them,
yeah.
right? Please tell me you boxed them.
Of course I boxed them. Sadly, I only, because I'm, kind of a chicken, I only did a $1 trifecta. However, nailed it. Boom. First bet,
really?
Santa Anita, nailed the trifecta.
Now, I've had trifectas that have paid $500 and trifectas that have paid $5, you know. So which one were you?
I nailed a dollar try that paid $29. Woo! Woo-hoo! And that's $29 that I didn't have. So there. Thank you very much.
Hey, anytime you can win a trifecta, it doesn't matter how much you win. It's a big deal.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Well, then I decided to kind of bring it back a little bit for race three. Kind of,
were there
yeah.
three horses in the race?
Thank you very much. There were six horses. How do you know? It doesn't matter because I was studying, Glenn. I was studying. And then we moved to race three. I, like, bit one to win. It was no big deal because I only put $2 on it. But race four, I'm like, I'm going to study again. And ended up on race four hitting a freaking exacta. I actually picked two horses. Chad's like, you never win the exacta. Are you sure you want to bet the exacta? I'm like, these are my two horses. Bet the exacta, nailed it. Nailed it. So at this point at Santa Anita, I have hit a trifecta and an exacta. And an exacta. I am like living large. The exacta paid. Are you ready for this, Glenn? The exacta
I am
paid.
Ready.
I did the $1 exacta box. It paid $16. Where's my applause?
Which is pretty good, actually.
I want my applause. Where is it? The cheering. Oh. Give me the cheering.
Sorry.
So, at this point, I'm at Santa Anita, and I have hit a trifecta, and I have hit an exacta. Now, I only bet like a dollar on each one, so obviously my payouts weren't that huge. But race five was coming up, and I had a lock, Glenn, as lock as it gets. Okay, hold
apparently,
on.
Apparently, baby
sorry.
Luke was excited about it, too.
Hold on. There we go. Okay, so I had a lock. This is the lock of the day, and it is a $300,000 grade two stakes race, a mile and an eighth, and you're going to recognize some of these names. One of the horses in it, Game On Dude.
Oh, really?
Game On
Dude
yeah,
was
Game it? Game On Dude. And the other horse that I've talked about because I love the name, Blue Skies and Rainbows. Okay? They're both heavy favorites, okay? Game On Dude is like, this is my lock. Glenn. It is going to finish Game On Dude and Blue Skies and Rainbows. There is nobody else in this race to me. I'm telling Chad, I'm like, I've already hit the trifecta. I've hit the exacta. I'm like, this is it. This is the race. I had the baby. I was feeding the baby. He's like, I'll go place the bet. course, I'm just like, let's just do a quiet, you know, low-dollar Exactabox. He comes back, and he has, like, quintupled my bet financially. Because he's like, you said it was a lock. This is a lock. There is nobody else that can win besides Game On Dude, followed up in second place with Blue Skies and Rainbow. Of course I'm going to box them. But, I mean, even the handicappers on below are like, basically, Blue Skies and Rainbows is going to come second behind Game On Dude. Every single person said that. I mean, this is a lock, Glenn.
How much
a lock.
Did he bet?
He bet a considerable amount. And, of course, then you box them, and then it becomes a much more considerable amount.
A considerable amount, right, exactly.
Yeah. So we have the race. Okay, mind you, it is going to be Game On Dude and Blue Skies and Rainbows. Let's see how I did. Let's play the race.
This takes a second to get started. So you're not going to tell us how much.
And,
huh?
Wait, they got to a good beginning. Blue Skies and Rainbows wants the early lead. We'll take it. And here comes Game On Dude on the outside. So the two favorites immediately go off to set the pace. Blue Skies and Rainbows, but Game On Dude absolutely sprinting up now. Those two hooked up here. They couldn't be going any quicker. They open up four lengths. Majestic Harbor is taking back into third. Then comes Imperative. Blingo's in behind that. At the back, Willie Conkiner and American Blend, a good 10 off the lead. They head to the three-quarter pole, and Blue Skies and Rainbow has gone back into the front now. Game On Dude right up alongside. They're keeping the pressure on one another, and they still clear by four. Imperative and Majestic Harbor now are joined third and getting closer to those leaders. Now we come back to Blingo, who's racing in fifth, giving them eight-length start. It's another three lengths back to Willie Conker and American Blend. They head to the half-mile pole. Game On Dude on the far side, and Blue Skies and Rainbows still in front by a length. Imperative now going to kick through on the inside. There goes Imperative to make it three in a line into the turn. They've been followed by Majestic Harbor. It's four back now to Blingo. Then comes American Blend and Willie Conker. They are coming to the quarter pole, and Imperative's gone through on the inside. Imperative leads them as they come to the top of the lane. Game On Dude on the far side. Blue Skies and Rainbows between them. Now Blingo and Majestic Harbor. They come to the top of the lane. Now there's five in a line in the San Antonio. Imperative, the long shot, running a huge one at the rail. But here's Blingo. Game On Dude is backed out of there. Down the center, Majestic Harbor. Imperative looking to cause a shock on the inside. Blingo's right up alongside. Imperative and Blingo nose and nose in a thriller. Blingo to get there. Blingo and Aaron Greider have won the San Antonio. Imperative, a huge one in second. Then American Blend, Majestic Harbor, and Game On Dude.
This is where my husband says, I thought you said it was a lock. I thought you said it's a lock. And I'm like, well, apparently it wasn't. He goes, but I bet a lot. I was like, what did you do? We do dollar trifectas or dollar exactas, honey. And he like hands me the ticket. I'm like, oh, no. So all of the trifecta money and all of the exacta money are gone. And,
and lunch money and gas money.
Yeah.
And
we can't even get home at this point, okay? When a mile and an eighth race, and the two horses that you bet run away at the beginning, you know it's never going to be good. They broke out of that gate and were literally 10 lengths ahead of everybody the whole race until the final stretch. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, here comes everybody else. Oh, I don't even think Blue Skies and Rainbows finished. Okay, that's how bad it was. I mean, bad. So
now, I will say, though, that this trifecta and this exacta, had you gotten Blingo in there, would have paid a lot of money, probably.
Oh, my God. It paid. It was like $300-something dollars for the trifecta. It was crazy. And so, sadly, I won a big fat nothing. I lost money by the end of the day because my husband, he wasn't allowed to go to the betting window
let's
anymore.
Let's just say the truth. He trusted you. See, he should have learned never to do that. See, that's what it really comes down to, is your husband trusted you. And now he knows never to trust you again.
Yeah.
Ever.
You're pretty much right, Glenn. You're pretty much right. You nailed it. Now, the rest of the time was spent stalking celebrities, like Zenyatta's owners were there. Well, Mr. Moss was there. I did see him, and I saw John Sheriffs, and I was like, good luck, Mr. Moss. And he looked at me, and he goes, hey. I was like, I just talked to Mr. Moss.
Well, you got a hey.
I got a hey. And then, oh, my God, Gary Stevens was riding horses. So, of course, I had to go down to the paddock, and I was like, I'm going to talk to Gary. I'm going to talk to Gary Stevens because he's George Wolf to me, and I love him. He's the Iceman. I get down there, and I'm like, yeah, that's what I said. I said, Gary, good luck. Bye, Gary. Bye. That was it. That was pretty much my conversation with Gary Stevens. He didn't even look at me. He was focused. He was on his mount already. But I did find my next event horse. It is owned by the Mosses and trained by John Sheriffs, and his name is Utopian. So if there's – I can't remember the website that I can go on to put down that I want that horse. So if anybody – Jennifer, can you remind me how to what website to go to tell them I want Utopian? Because, oh, my God.
I will look that up for you. I can
thank you.
That.
I'd appreciate
it. It's Thoroughbred
it.
Connect. That's it. It's Thoroughbred Connect.
Thoroughbred Connect. Okay, I'm going to go on there, and I'm going to tell the Mosses that if I can't have Zenyatta, because I've already put her down, I need to have Utopian. He didn't win, so, you know,
there's
he should be retired and come to live with me. Yeah.
Well, you had quite a weekend. That was sounded like a lot of fun. That is a racetrack I would like to see sometime. That's just one of the classics in the country that you just have to see.
You know, I definitely would. Yeah, I would tell everybody to, if you haven't been there, put that on your bucket list. It was amazing. I haven't been to Saratoga yet, so I do need to go to the East Coast, but it was awesome. Like Chad even said, next time we go to L.A. to visit family, we're going back. It was that cool. It was, and now we kind of know how to do it, you know. Just don't go kind of in the, you know, pay $5 extra to get to the top floor and go to the restaurant and all that. It was spectacular. It was spectacular. Even though I might have had some empty pockets on the way home.
even though you might have misled your husband.
It was his fault. It was his fault. I didn't tell him to bet that much.
See, I tend to be that way, too. I get bored with betting just to win, you know, $2 to win here, $2 to win there. And it only ever pays $2.10. It's like, well, what fun is that? So
yeah.
I always bet the exactas and the trifectas. And, I win once in every 10 trips to the track. And then I always win the one that pays, like, you know, $22 instead of the one that pays
right.
$2,000. I never,
yeah.
never win those. Never works for me.
No. No, and that's the thing is Chad said, even he was like, you know, if we just keep betting these show bets, we're losing money. He goes, we may win one of them, but then we've spent so much more just trying to get a winner that we don't win anything. He's like, so that's what I was doing. You said it was a lock. Yeah. Sorry about that.
Oops. And it was his money, too, because you sent him up that time, right? So it was his money that time.
It was all my winnings. It was all my winnings gone, flushed down the drain.
You had nothing left for like a new bridle or a new halter or anything? Nothing.
No, pretty much nothing. But I did buy a T-shirt, so so there.
There you go.
well,
I'm going to talk
like
about.
Oh,
yeah,
you want to talk about Omega Alpha?
I was just going to mention that, you know, Omega Alpha Equine is our title sponsor for this episode, and our listener Uta. Sent me a very nice note, made my Monday morning this morning, and I appreciate that, Uta. Thank you so much for sending it. But she said that, let me just read a little bit of this to you. She said she gets up and she cleans her stalls with her flex and fork. She cleans the horse's feet with her illuminated hoof pick. And when the horses get fed, they get their stud muffins, and Stormy gets his Omega Alpha supplements. So, Uta, you're a true fan, and we really appreciate you. Apparently, Stormy gets some Respirefree in the beginning of spring and some anti-flam this time of year because he's getting a little bit older. So, yeah, that's what I wanted to mention is that we heard from a listener on Omega Alpha.
Good. Yeah, anti-flam is good, especially for horses like hers. You know, you're getting a little older, and you don't want to give them bute all the time because it tears up their stomach. You can give them anti-flam, which is kind of the same – it does the same thing. It's an anti-inflammatory. That's why it's called anti-flam. They spelled it out for you. And you don't have to give them the harsh chemicals of butte that really kind of tear up their stomach after a long use. So if you want to take care of your guys, go to OmegaAlphaEquine.com. Check out anti-flam. If you have any questions, you can email them right there. Connect with them on their Facebook page. They're always posting cool stuff. So OmegaAlphaEquine.com.
And, of course, all of their products are all natural products. And bait, all natural and herbal, correct? Well, let's get on with our – well, actually, we're waiting for our first guest. So while we're waiting for that, I wanted to mention, give some love to our Canadian listeners, that inventor Rebecca Howard was named Canadian Equestrian of the Year. Her and her horse, Riddle Master, who I've had the fortune to see, is a lovely horse, have been crowned Canadian Equestrian of the Year and Canadian Bred Horse of the Year. And I love how they put this. Rebecca Howard and her horse, Riddle Master, have been crowned Canadian Equestrian of the Year and Canadian Bred Horse of the Year, respectively. So in case we couldn't figure out who the horse was or who the person was, they put that in there. And Equine Canada Gala Awards held in Winnipeg, Manitoba. They had their best finish when third at the hotly contested CIC three-star at Barbary International Horse Trials in July, and they finished 12th at Badminton and Burley, and Riddle Master ended the season in 13th place in the 2013 FEI World Horse Ranking. So congratulations to Rebecca Howard and to Riddle Master. Well, Jennifer's going to lead the next one. We have our first guest on here today. And it's always lovely to have her back. Jennifer, take it away.
And we'd love to. We are very happy to welcome to the show Diane Little, our favorite helper for Hunters and Jumpers, who is here this month. She's going to chit-chat a little bit about horse show anxiety and who amongst us haven't had that. I have that when I'm not going to horse shows. So help us out here with it, Diane. What can we
she
do?
Has
and
that
you are
just
down
thinking
south now,
about
aren't you?
Horse show. Diane, are you there?
Yes, sorry. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
So I just arrived in Wellington. We just finished our first week of horse showing. So it's been a topic that has been very, very prominent and very much on my mind. So I figured, you know, since I've been dealing with horse show anxiety with my students all week, I figured I would talk a little bit about, you know, how we handle it and how I go about trying to get people past that point. I think one of the hardest things about horse showing is when anybody comes to a horse show, there's this pressure about the next division above you and moving up and jumping higher and this and that. And I really think that that's one of the reasons that my students deal with so much anxiety is they feel this pressure to have to get to that next level. So what I do is I always tell them that we are going to school at home one level higher, harder, you know, more difficult than what you're going to do in the competition so that you feel fully prepared, if not overly prepared, when you walk into that arena. I can't say that solved the problem, but I certainly think that it can help dramatically.
So, Diane, when you have students who are competing at a certain level at shows and they want to move up, but you feel like they're not ready to move up, how do you deal with that at the homeschooling situation? In other words, are there certain exercises, are there certain things that you do with those students at home to help them prepare better for that desire to move up? Are there things you can do with it?
I think that is one of the hardest things as a trainer is to help the students make those decisions and to tell the students when they're truly not ready. You know, you want your students to be where they want to be. You want them to be successful. You want them to feel accomplished. So I want them all to be at that level that they want to be at. But, you know, a lot of times it does happen that way where the trainers are getting pushed to have the students move up when they might not quite be prepared. So I was told, when I was a working student for Wilhelm Genn, he told me that I had to have 10 rounds in the show ring that were consistent. Doesn't mean I had to win. Doesn't mean I had to even jump clean. Just consistent. And when I showed him 10 consistent rounds, he told me I was allowed to move up. So that's something that I've always kind of taken with me, is the idea of, I mean, it doesn't have to be exactly 10, but you know what I mean, a very large amount of numbers of rounds in the show ring where I feel like I walk in there and I know that I am prepared, I feel confident. That's when I tell myself it's time to move to that next level.
Now, Diane, how much of it is peer pressure? Their best friend has moved up and they haven't.
A huge amount of it, especially when you're dealing with a lot of, it becomes extraordinarily large amount of it. And what I tell my girls, I have a lot of girls around that 13, 14 to 18-year-old range, I tell them that it's not just about them, it's about their horse. So sometimes we get so focused on us. We need to move up. It's our, you know, I'm good enough. When the truth is it is a team sport with your animal. So maybe your animal's just not ready. Maybe your horse isn't quite ready to make that step. So I try, especially with that age group, to take the focus away from them and put it more on the horse that they're riding at that time.
So, Diane, now if we flip that over and look at the reverse, when you have a student who is ready to move up in that their riding skill is there, but emotionally maybe they're a little bit timid about moving up, what are some things we can do to work with that student?
You know, I don't feel that it's my job to over-push the students when it comes to competition. I'll push them at home. When we're working at home, I will push them to challenge themselves. When we're at a competition, if my student tells me I'm not comfortable, we're not going to do it. Because those horses feel that anxiety. They feel those nerves.
That's great advice right there. Yeah.
It's just, you know, for the professionals, okay, it's about our business and about us, you know, growing our business and making money at these horses. For a lot of these students, it's about enjoying yourself. So I really want them to come and feel confident and have fun and get those ribbons. It feels good to get a ribbon. Even if it is just, you know, a piece of fabric, it still feels good to get that ribbon and take that home with you.
Now, how much of it, let me ask you a hard question for you. How much of that peer pressure and all of that wanting to succeed goes on amongst the trainers? And I know it does, where, you know, they're feeling pressure to have their students do well. And now, you know, now there may be some decisions made that aren't necessarily for the benefit of the student. Do you see that?
You do see that. But, I mean, most of the trainers, you know, we're really good friends to each other. You know, we all work together. So say that I haven't run into that too much.
Okay, good. Well, that's good. I'm glad to hear that. That's good. And now you're down in a place where the competition is stiff and where there's a million people all in one area, but where everybody wants to be. That has to add. When you head to Wellington, that, you know, some of these kids, it's probably their first time, you know, going to a situation like that. And then they're around all these top name riders from all over the world. The British are here. Everybody's there. It's got to add to the whole nervousness of it all.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. Most of my students with me this year have never been here. So it was our first week, and plus, it's Wellington, and we all know that for some reason causes anxiety just saying the word. And, you know, we traveled all the way here, and it was definitely a week of just, needing to remind them that they've done these classes time and time again. And if anything, you are in a situation like this, set up to be, do well, to be more successful. You have phenomenal footing. You have phenomenal courses. You have absolutely wonderful organization at this horse show. You are set up to have a very successful day. So I try to take that pressure off. It doesn't really work. You know, the big thing is to get them in that ring. Don't overdo that first round. If you have a rail, if you have two rails, come out with a smile on your face. You know, that first round is about getting in there, experiencing it, and then after that, I feel like we can take a deep breath and we realize that even though it is you get to see the best riders in the world, you're still riding in a class that is appropriate for your level.
Right, yeah. So, as usual, fantastic advice. I'm going to take lots of notes on this because it's great advice whether you ride hunters, jumpers, reiners, competitive trail horses. This applies to anybody who competes at any level. And are you posting all of your great adventures on the Piece by Piece Farm Facebook page for us?
We are. We're trying to put up tons of pictures, which I think is kind of mean because it's like 6 degrees in Philadelphia. But everybody is loving seeing the update. So we are trying to keep everybody super updated with how we're doing.
Oh, that's great. As usual. So, folks, everybody, you can go out and keep track of Diane Little and her students' adventures by going to her Facebook page, which is Piece, P-E-A-C-E, by Piece, P-I-E-C-E, Farm. Usually if you put that into your Google search and you just put Piece by Piece Farm, it'll pop right up. And thank you once again for stopping by, Diane, and we'll see you next month.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you, Diane. And, of course, you know, we're at a Monday here, and it's the beginning of February, which means that we have a expo coming up this weekend we'd like to tell you about. And right after we do, we are going to be going to Kat from Eat Your Tart Out, the blog, who has sent us some chocolate to take the Great Chocolate Challenge. We're going to see who can identify the chocolate better. Jamie, Jennifer, and I. But right after this, I found a very funny chocolate song to get you all in the mood.
If you are looking for a cure for the winter blues, then the Southern Equine Expo is the answer. Formerly the Southern Horse Bonanza, the Expo will return to the Tennessee Miller Coliseum in Murfreesboro, Tennessee on February 14th through the 16th. During this event, attendees will enjoy clinics presented by nationally known horsemen, educational seminars, and hands-on demonstrations. And new to this year's expo are competitions, including a blacksmith and farrier competition and a youth ranch horse challenge. Many past guests of the Horse Radio Network will be clinicians at this fantastic event. Chris Cox, Tammy Crawford, Dick Pieper, Chase Dodd, Lisa Wysocki, Mark and Miranda Lyon, and so many more covering a diversity of disciplines. Our good friend Wayne Williams of Speaking of Horses will be doing the announcing. Plus, it is one of the most affordable expos in the country at only $9 for adults for advanced tickets. Oh, did I mention the shopping? There is lots of it, and who doesn't need a shopping fix in the middle of February? If you live anywhere near Tennessee, plan a trip to Murfreesboro for the Southern Equine Expo, presented by Tartar Farm and Ranch Equipment. That's February 14th through the 16th. Visit them online for all the details at southernequineexpo.com.
When your feet feel like they're made of stones and your bones are full of lead, and your muscles feel like the galvanized and the concrete in your head, when your blood flows like molasses and you can't add two and two, when the top looks like the bottom and orange looks like blue, when you feel like you're hungover but you didn't drink last night, and your eyes are like a road map and your underwear feels tight, gravity seems to multiply and your organs are on strike, you're in sudden death overtime and the wheels are off your bike. You need some chocolate, some creamy chocolate,
some chocolate ice cream, and chocolate mousse, some chocolate cheesecake, Bavarian chocolate. Bring on the chocolate, we need a boost,
we need a boost. Now they say it gives us pimples, it's addictive and it stains. It makes us fat and hyper and clogs up all our veins. It puts migraines in our noggins and it's worse than cigarettes. But all those things are easier than having a chocolate fit. Now there's lots of medical evidence to support our point of view. It's not all psychological, good news for me and you. It affects our serotonin, which reduces aches and pains, and does all kinds of cool things to the chemistry of our brains. Good old chocolate, dark chewy chocolate, Nanaimo snack bars, chocolate eclairs, hot chocolate sundaes, sweet chocolate milkshakes. Bring on the chocolate, we need a boost, we need a boost. Now they say we're chocolate-holics, and we have a legitimate beef, that we should lobby government to get funding for relief. Now if you can keep a secret, just leave it up to me. I'll take the funds and build us a chocolate factory. And if life should get too heavy, we decide to end it all. We won't do it with a pistol, drugs or alcohol. We'll just take $1,000 to a nice dessert cafe, eat a dump truck load of chocolate, and do ourselves away, cause we love chocolate, mouth-watering chocolate.
Are you just stopping this song? Hello? Glenn?
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah. I was on mute. My bad.
Oh, there we go. Thank God you turned that off. That was awful.
That was no, like it was great. You have no ever. Sense of humor. You need a sense of humor transplant. It's a great chocolate song. So
I was
we are going
more to production value and production value and lyrics and yeah. That was
I
all.
Think it was done on a stage at a country fair in the middle of nowhere. Well, it is time for the Great Chocolate Challenge. Kat from Eat Your Tart Out has supplied us with some great chocolates, and we have Kat on the line. Good morning, Kat.
Good morning. How are you both doing?
Good. Hey, we're ready. We're ready. We're psyched up.
Is Jamie ready to eat chocolate this early in the morning?
Man, you know what I did is I took a Zantac. I'm ready to go.
Good job.
Thank you.
All right. So,
explain
to us, Kat, what you have done here. What have you done?
Okay. Well, I have sent 9 samples to Jamie and Glenn. They are a variety of chocolates from pretty much all over the place, going from Dubai to the UK, all over, pretty much all over. They're very expensive for the most part because they're so, I guess, special is the only way to do it. They're combining some really rare ingredients that I would have never expected to have in chocolate. There's one that technically isn't a chocolate, but because we were just doing this, I figured what a great way to just kind of throw it all in the mix. But yeah, I mean, nothing, there's only one that I would say that's probably going to be a way out there that I will warn you ahead of time before we jump into that one, but everything else is subtle. It's not going to be a, oh my gosh, I'm going to spit it out and I'm going to die. There's no meat in it. Yeah, there's nothing.
No
bugs?
Like,
it just,
please tell
no
me about
bugs. No, no.
Okay.
That's the one, no. Somebody has told me they're like Rice Krispies and I was like, I can't do it. I'm sorry.
All right, let's make sure we can hear Jennifer here. She's in my studio now. She has now moved over.
Yeah, I'm in the studio now, and I'm looking at our first sample.
Oh, yes.
And it, you know what it looks like? It looks like a caterpillar that has wintered over and is now in its cocoon.
All right, so
it smells like it,
we're going to start with sample number 1, which looks nothing like chocolate, Kat.
Well, this one, yes. This is technically, it's still chocolate. I promise you that much. But it's definitely on the very far spectrum of flavors you may never put together in chocolate. Again, that's why I bought it, is because I wanted to try it and see what it was all about. And I've actually found this chocolate in quite a number of brands all across the country. So this is one that, even though it's an oddball flavor, a lot of places have picked it up to kind of showcase it.
Everybody, just be happy you don't have smell of it.
Yeah, Jennifer almost passed out smelling it.
Okay, so should
right,
we eat
here
it
we
now?
Go. Yeah, I'm going to take my little judging bite.
It doesn't taste as bad as it smells.
Oh, you know, it doesn't taste too bad at all, actually. I was kind of surprised. It looks terrible. It's yellow, first of all.
Yeah, it's bright, like sunshine yellow.
Now,
are we
supposed
to guess?
What's in it?
Well, if you want to guess, go ahead. I mean, some of these flavors I think are going to be a little, yes, coconut is one of them.
I have a guess.
All right.
It's white chocolate coconut earwax.
Kind of looks like that.
So it's the end of it.
Very close. It's actually white chocolate, coconut, and curry over a cashew.
That's the earwax.
That's
where the funky smell came from, and neither Jennifer and I like curry, but Jamie, you love curry, right?
Yeah, I don't usually put it with coconut. Well, coconut curry's good, but you don't usually put it with chocolate, so I need some water.
Yeah, I got my water here, too. We all have our water.
What's the little thing in the middle that looks a little bit like an uncooked cashew?
It's cashew. Yeah, it's a raw cashew. Okay. That's in there.
Okay, so now where did you find this one, and where does it come from?
This one I got in Boston at one of the higher-end chocolate shops. And like I said, I have seen this. I just actually went on a Sweet Tooth tour this past weekend in St. Louis, and they had this at some of their higher-end chocolate shops. So they are carrying it. It's by a company called Marich, M-A-R-I-C-H. They do a lot of, like, these smaller covered bits. I have one that's a mint chocolate malted milk ball one that they do, and they do a lot of, like,
ooh,
little bite-sized pieces.
Yeah, you should have sent us that one. I love mint chocolate malted milk balls. They're great.
All right. Maybe in the next batch I'll do a more subdued, like, kind of normal flavors that actually sound delicious.
Okay. All right. Well, we're heading on to number two. Are you ready, Jamie?
Let's do it.
Smells like chocolate. All right. Smells like chocolate.
Looks like chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
It's like dark chocolate. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Kind of doesn't taste like dark chocolate.
There's some crunchies in it.
Yeah, there's definitely
like a
crunchies.
Smoke flavor. Smoky.
Oh, something happens after you start eating it. I don't know. It's smoky almost.
Yeah.
Neat
like
foot oil. You put neat foot oil on the chocolate?
What's that?
Is there neat foot oil in this one? Because it kind of
no.
has that... No, just checking.
Nope. No, this one's actually one of my more favorites, though. Do you want me to? You
it's
want
not
any
bad.
More guesses?
It's not
dark
bad. It's kind of got a
chipotle.
There
well,
you go.
It's dark chocolate, but no, it has no peppers in it whatsoever. It's actually toasted corn that's in there.
Really?
That's where I got the smoky sort of flavor from.
Yes. Yeah. It's really delicious. It's actually one of my more favorites of these oddballs that we picked out for today. But, yeah, it's like once you start to taste it, it's kind of like you get that popcorn-y flavor, but it's more of like a roasted corn. Yeah.
Okay, now I had a second bite now that you've said that, and I can tell. I can tell now. Yeah. Yep, you're right.
Yeah.
That one's not bad.
Not bad.
That one's
not bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
That one's approved.
All right. I'm
where did that one come
from?
What foreign country did that one come from?
This one is from Peru. It's an Eclat chocolate bar, and I got this one when I was in D.C.,
right,
at the
cool.
Deluca. So, yeah, that was
was that one of the $12 bars you told us about?
Yes, it was. Yes.
Right. It tasted expensive.
Oh, this one has good wrapper sound.
All right, the next one's in a wrapper, and it looks like a cashew. It looks like a chewy cashew.
Okay, this one is going to be
caramel.
The most extreme
caramel,
one.
Sorry.
It is a caramel. If you guys are a little bit hesitant this morning, I wouldn't try it. I would just say I'll give you the answer prior to trying it. But if you're adventurous and you want to try it, please go ahead. This one just, it's very far in whatever direction
this
you want
to go. This one comes with a warning.
Well, it's one of those things I've had people try it before, and they've literally are just like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe you didn't warn me ahead of time. So if you're adventurous and you want to try it, please do. I'm not trying to set us up this morning, but it is one that I.
What's in it? You like it? Jennifer likes it.
I see. It's my
broccoli
favorite.
Caramel.
Broccoli?
It is a rosemary truffle sea salt caramel. So truffle
that's
for
Jennifer
anybody
likes
who doesn't know. It's like a mushroom.
Jennifer loves rosemary. Yeah, that's why you like
rosemary.
It. Yeah.
That's the flavor. You're right. Yeah, now that you say it, it's rosemary. And rosemary should not be used on anything except potatoes and salmon.
Well, now you have it in a sweet application with mushrooms, so.
Okay, I'm not really a fan of that one. That one wasn't my favorite.
No, like I said, some people, if you love rosemary, it's a delicious caramel, but if you don't, it not even close.
That must have been from, like, some South American country.
No, surprisingly, I found that at a Boston farmer's market.
Oh, there you go. Italian farmer's market in Boston. That's the other. All right, now the other one looked like little tiny malted milk balls. This is number four now. Looks like little tiny malted milk balls.
Okay, this one is definitely going to be kind of to gain your trust back again. This one isn't bad at all. you may not be able to taste the nuances of it, if you will, but I just thought it was kind of an interesting what they were calling it. So it's, like I said, I like this one too. It's good. It's something I would eat again.
It's chocolate and caramel.
Yeah. Kind of
okay.
chocolate
They're
caramel.
They're calling it Black Forest caramels, which is going to be kind of like a cherry, but I don't really get a cherry with this one.
I mean, actually, there's a little bit of cherry in there.
Yeah, so.
There's a flavor. It
must be fun
That's
for everybody
good.
At home listening to us eat chocolate. It's fun
for
us.
I'm happy that they're not trying.
Yeah, I'm going to have a monster bellyache after this. This is all cat, eat your tart out. Thank you very much, Kev. This is awesome. I'm going to have heartburn the rest of the day. But I took the pill.
You took
the outside.
I like that one, actually. I could eat more
okay,
of that.
Okay, that one I got at Dean and DeLuca, and that one was another DC find.
What's Dean and DeLuca?
They are a higher-end grocery store, like very high-end grocery store. New York City has them. DC has them. I'm not sure where else has them, but on a trip to DC is where I found that one.
In other words, we can't afford to go there.
I find interesting about this one is I like the outside more than the inside. I like the outside chocolate. It has a nice astringent. I think probably comes from the cherry. I like the astringent outside to it. That's kind of fun.
Okay.
Now, number five looks strange. It's kind of it looks like a big fat candy bar, and then there's other things in here. I'm not sure what this is. It looks strange. Did you look strange, Jamie? Are you? Okay.
It looks promising because it looks like chocolate with nuts, but there's a weird flavor in the chocolate.
It's banana in there. Yes. Chocolate-covered bananas are excellent. We get those at Disney all the time, but this is a little different.
That's good.
So
I like this,
this one is from one of my favorite chocolatiers that I found. They have the only shop or store that they have in the U.S. They're a U.K.-based company called Hotel Chocolat. They're based out of the U.K. So this bar in particular that you have, they call them their slabs. They do these really, really, really thick candy bars. And this one is a banoffee pie, which banoffee is a big European dessert. And it's got bananas, caramel. They put in chocolate. There's usually cookies. And then they put in some dried banana slices.
Oh, that's what's in here is dried banana slices.
Yeah, you don't get the fake banana.
I got it. Do you like that one, Jamie?
I did. I kind of like that one.
You know how I feel about bananas. They have to be green, green, green. So anything you do with bananas after they come out of the green, green, greenness, I'm not a fan of. So that wasn't my favorite.
Well, I liked it, Kat.
Jamie approved.
I actually took two bites of that one. So
I'm
trying to save a couple because my husband has been staring at these things and actually has tried to eat a couple of them already. And I'm like, back off, like, because I've been saving them. They've been sitting next to the computer. My mouth is watering. What's number five? Are we on five or six?
That was the one we just did.
Six.
Six. Yep. All right.
It has some pretty striations across the center. It's pretty.
Sorry. It looks like normal chocolate candy bar.
Yeah, and that one, like I said, is one of the more weird flavors. They've got one that's actually my favorite. It's called Eton Mess, which is, you know, another kind of thing that they do.
Just spit it out.
Oh, no.
It was not her favorite. I don't know what flavor I'm getting out of this thing.
This is number six that we're doing?
Yeah, number
six.
Yeah,
it's like a dark chocolate, smoky something.
You know, she tried again, spit it out a second time, so that's not working. Number six isn't working. I think it's, I don't think it's too bad, but it definitely has a, I don't know, it's weird. It's kind of got an orange,
I want to say peppery.
Citrusy, orangey something flavor going on.
See, now there's two bars that are of the same company, and I can't remember which one I put as number six, so I'm trying. I'm pretty sure the one you guys are eating is a sweet basil and cherry blossom bar.
Well, I had the fruit thing. The basil's kind of weird.
Okay, now I get the
yeah, that's kind of weird.
I'm not that fond of
yeah.
I wonder how much of this, Jamie, is, you know, I eat basil. We love basil. But, you know, I wonder how much of this is because it's unexpected where we're eating it. You know, you expect it in spaghetti sauce.
You know, I think that what Kat should have done is, along with all of these samples of chocolate, sent a wine pairing. And then it would have been perfect.
And the key is you got to take a drink in between each one because they kind of get stuck in there.
Like, I feel like I need some wine right now, and it is 8 o'clock in the morning for me.
All right, the next one actually has writing on it. I see a little bit of writing on mine. It's number 7 on the hit parade, and it says Chua, C-H-U-A-O. How do you say that in Spanish, Jenny? Chua? Chua?
I don't know. Mine doesn't have any writing. I'm taking a Bible.
All right, this is number 7.
Oh, yeah, I don't like this one. Ooh, what is this?
Spit it out. Jamie spit it out. There it went.
Ah! My throat is closing up.
This must be some kind of chili thing.
No, it's not.
No?
The texture reminds me of...
You know what? It's very salty.
Is it salty?
I think it's salty.
You know what?
Fact,
I think what happened is because I was telling you guys that I didn't remember which one, so I may have
screwed up. That's the basil one. Yeah, that's the basil one. Mm.
Okay, so I think with these last three, I was struggling a little bit to remember which ones I sent to Jamie. So Jamie may be trying number 8, but you guys, Jennifer and Glenn, I think what you have is a salted chocolate crunch, and this is toasted breadcrumbs dusted in sea salt.
Now, see,
okay,
I like
that
salt.
Was my last one.
Yeah, you like,
so now
you
have
like that
forward.
I like it. Yeah, I kind of like that one, the saltiness, because I love salt on everything. So
yeah.
And what's it called?
I like that one. Yeah.
It's from Chuo Chocolatier, and it's a salted chocolate crunch.
Where's that from?
That one I actually got at Wegmans, but I've seen them in a lot of grocery stores if they have, like, a
it's
higher
It's like its
end...
own country.
Yeah, I know. No, I know. And it's only at Wegmans. Chuo brand, they do sell it like Walmart and things like that. They may not carry this specific bar, but they do sell their kinds of chocolate at most big retailers.
Now, the next one looks inviting. This is number 8. Because it's got a little, it looks like a chocolate sandwich of some sort, because it's got little, it looks like it's a dark chocolate around some other substance. So we're going to find out what the other substance is here.
It's vinegar mint. Hmm.
Flavors into the bars through olive oil and vinegar.
Oh.
Really?
Oh, wait a minute. I got to spit my nose. Okay, that one I didn't like at all. Oh,
okay,
man.
That one I actually liked, but not as much as, like, maybe the last one we had with the breadcrumbs. It's more of a tasting chocolate, but this one is black cherry and lemonade.
Oh,
black
the lemonade, I think.
That's really, really
lemony.
Because you know what it is after you get, oh, it's lovely chocolate flavor. And then after about 15, 30 seconds, those other flavors come
kick,
in.
Yeah, kick in.
It's too late. You've already got it in your mouth. Like, ah! Yeah. That was mean, Kat.
Did you like that one, Jamie? I didn't like that one so much. Oh. Oh, I think we lost Jamie, actually. She had a baby attack. But, that one was black cherry lemonade, and you did get a lot of lemon in that one. Oh, Kat, are you still with us?
Yes. No, I'm still here. I was letting you finish. I just didn't want to interrupt you kind of bashing my chocolate. It's okay.
Okay, wait, which one are we on? Sorry, I had to run to get the baby. Which one are we on?
We just did number 8, which we determined was a black cherry lemonade.
Yeah, that one was bad.
Yeah, we didn't like that one so much. But to each his own, right?
You
like that one.
Well, I think our two bad ones are from a company called Ethereal Confections, and they're getting their infusions from olive oil and vinegar. I didn't mind them for tastings, but I'm not going to sit down and chow down the whole bar. Like, that's not really my thing. I'll try one little piece, and I'm like, okay, try that, been there, done that. Okay, moving on.
Okay. And
what was the name of that company? Because I want to make sure I don't buy any of their stuff.
It's called Ethereal Confections. And this
one I found
at a shop in Boston. They source everything all across the world as far as really unique chocolates, and that's where I got that one.
Apparently, I'm not a unique chocolate guy. All right, we got number 9, which is the last one of the day. It almost has. It looks like it's in a little cellophane wrapper. It's very
satin
pretty.
Satin gold.
Yeah, it says patchy on it, and it looks like it would be absolutely lovely.
I think it smells kind of fruity.
Oh, it smells good. Oh, is this going to have? You know how when you get the box of chocolates and nobody wants the one with the raspberry center? Is that what this is?
No, it's not.
Oh, my God. This one is good. Mmm. This is a melt-in your mouth variety.
Yes. This one was meant to be nice to you guys.
I
oh,
like
you know
it
what? Okay, that one wins.
Okay.
I can eat this whole bar.
Okay. That one was a... it was a chocolate from Dubai that my sister picked up for me when she was there, and it is just a milk chocolate with a hazelnut cream spread that's inside. So,
it's good. It smells like Jennifer's hazelnut coffee that she makes in the morning. Yeah, I like that one. That one's good.
That one's good. Let's go through these again. The white little ball was number one. Was what again?
It was a coconut curry cashew with white chocolate.
Okay, I'm writing these down. And what was number two?
Number two was a – that was your toasted corn one.
That's right. Toasted corn
and dark chocolate.
Number three was the caramel rosemary.
With truffle.
with truffle. Number four was a milk chocolatey-looking bar.
Number four was actually your Black Forest caramels.
Okay. And then number five was the banana caramel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ugh.
And then number six, now their number six and my number six were different. So what was their number six?
Their number six would have been the sweet basil and cherry blossom.
Okay, and then their number seven was the toasted what now?
Breadcrumbs and salt.
Why wouldn't it be toasted breadcrumbs and salt and chocolate? I mean, clearly that's obvious.
That's what everybody wants.
And then number eight was black cherry lemonade. Number Dubai hazelnut milk chocolate from Dubai. Okay, Dubai, I think it's a hands down winner, Glenn.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree. And Lord knows what she spent for that over there.
I didn't ask questions. I just said thank you.
It's not dollars over there, so it doesn't matter because it's not real money. It's play money. Right, Kat?
Exactly. Yes, yes.
That's right. Yeah, it all has a little bit of an oily sheen to it. Hey, Kat, don't you write for a chocolate company or work with a chocolate company somehow?
Yeah, I sure do. So Boston, they have what's called Boston Chocolate Tours, and they're kind of a company that does chocolate walking tours across Boston. They also do tons of workshops, pairings, different outings, nights out, things like that, that are all chocolate-driven. So I actually write for them some recipes monthly and then just kind of work with them whenever I get to go back to Boston.
And, yeah, I always wanted to do that chocolate tasting tour when we were in up there, and we just never got to it. Now, I assume you get to go around and try different kinds of cakes and desserts and anything chocolate.
Yes, yeah, and they do have, like, a cupcake tour. So if you're more into sweets in general or you just like cupcakes, they have that. But the chocolate tour is... There's a competitor that's out there that I don't recommend, but their company specifically, it's usually like a two-hour tour. They take you through one neighborhood of Boston, give you a background on it, and then they walk you through anywhere from like 8 to 10 different shops. And either along the way you're getting samples or you're getting to try something at every store, and you're getting like big samples of everything. So by the end of the tour, you're like in a coma just because you've had so much sugar in such a short
bouncing
period of time.
Bouncing off the walls.
Right. It's nothing like this. So if you can imagine what we just did, like times 20, that's kind of what the tour is like. It's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of work too.
I'm going to be bouncing off the walls. You know, I've been off sugar for a while, so I'll be bouncing off the walls in about an hour.
Okay.
But, yeah.
Yeah, you'll give
Jamie,
me a call.
You can just
say,
feed
okay,
the leftovers to baby Luke. He'll be fine the rest of the day. Promise.
Mm-hmm.
I hear him.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. Although he's in my lap right now and he's reaching for all of the containers. I'm like, nope, stop.
Well, thank you so much, Kat, for putting this together. Where can people find out more about what you do?
Over at eatyourtartout.com.
I got to tell you, Kat, before I let you go, thank you very much. I am a Eat Your Tart Out blogger junkie now, because I have made a couple of your recipes and really enjoyed it. And I actually had to email Kat. I'm like, where is this recipe? I can't find it. And so some of the recipes on your website are work in progress. Is that what I hear?
Yeah, so we're trying to figure out a way to better explain it, but what I have done is I've kind of integrated my Instagram into my blog feed, if you will, on the homepage. So you'll get tons of pictures. We wanted it very image-driven. You start drooling every time you look at the site is kind of where we were going with it. But I have recipes and all sorts of fun things, and then as you look on there, there's kind of works in progress, things that are going on in my kitchen currently that – you know, I'm just trying to perfect before I put them up on the blog. So it gives people a chance to kind of get excited about things or ask more if they've got questions. Say, hey, I love what you're doing in the kitchen. Give me some pointers on how to do this gluten-free or vegan or this. And that's where it kind of comes into play, so I can help people kind of design and kind of move forward in the kitchen too.
Well, and what I think is cool is that, you know, I have a million cookbooks. But, you know, honestly, I have an iPad, and when I'm cooking dinner, I take the iPad into the kitchen, and I Google recipes, and what I do is I take all the ingredients that I have. Like, say I'm like, I've got some leeks, and I've got some cream cheese, and
right.
I'll just Google leek cream cheese, and whatever recipe that comes up that I really like, that's what I'll make. And so now I just go to Eat Your Tart Out, and I look around and say, do I have that, because everything on there is really good, and we so appreciate you doing it, and you're like the cookbook for the new generation.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. That's what I'm trying to go for, is just kind of bringing, you know, I think people go out to eat a little bit too much, and I'm trying to find ways to get inspired to be in the kitchen, to use up what they have in the kitchen and things like that. So we're
good,
just trying to make, you know, cooking more fun.
There are no restaurants near me, so I really appreciate it.
I'm the same boat, so I understand.
And you're lot more fun and entertaining than that other prairie lady, just saying.
Okay, thank you.
I think you should get your own TV show. The heck with her. I'm going to put
it
in a
petition. Well, Sidelines is trying to do that to me. I also write for Sidelines in their print magazine, so I have a monthly column in there where I do a lot of fun things for equestrians. And now that they just released their digital magazine, they're having me do videos for cooking tips and kind of things like
that.
Cool. So
it's,
as much as I don't have the setup, we're trying really hard to get it, you know, something really fun. So that's something we're going towards. So I have one video up there on how to actually frost a cake and give people some great tips on how to make it look very professional. And I have no idea what I'm going to do this month, but I'm sure we'll come up with something fun.
Did you have to build a fake kitchen? So you could do the
no,
video.
My kitchen's pretty nice. It's big, but the hard part is because it's just me on the camera. I had to set it up.
You know, and that's what I was wondering too, is how do you get these pictures of food so beautiful? Because if you go to a restaurant, you know, you think you go to a Korean restaurant and they have a picture of the plate that you're going to get, it always looks disgusting. And your pictures of food are gorgeous.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it's definitely a lot of work, and more people get mad because the food's usually cold by the time I get done. I'm like, no, I have to shoot the picture. Like, I couldn't bring up batches of my cinnamon rolls I made this past week because I'm like, I'm sorry, I have to photograph them at home in this light. And they're like, are you kidding? I'm like, I'm sorry. In the name of the blog, you have to do it.
You're that girl.
I know. I am. We talked about that on the Stable Scoop radio show a couple months ago, and yeah, unfortunately, I've turned into that girl, but it's all for the bloggers, you know, that are out there kind of following, so.
Well, good job, Kat. We love you.
All right. Thanks well, thank you, guys. I hope you enjoy the rest of your Sugar Shock day.
Okay.
Oh, thanks, Kat. I'm going to have a crash here in a minute. Go to sleep.
All right. Take care.
Bye, Kat. EatYourTartOut.com or EatYourTartOut on Facebook, and tart spelled with an E at the end. And speaking of sugar comas, I think there's someone who's just got back from a vacation that has a bit of a beignet coma, and that is Leslie from Horse Nation. Just got back from a little vacation to Louisiana. Tell me you ate beignets every day.
Every day. Oh, my goodness. Like,
for some reason,
never...
I really thought, let me stop you here, because when Glenn said beignets, I must not know a lot about food. I thought you were going to say you got back from Paris. And then it's like, Louisiana. I wasn't
almost
sure I thought you were going to go.
New Orleans.
Okay, carry on.
New Orleans. Yeah, it was so good. We just ate our way through the city. Man, so much good food. We were just like... like just waiting to get hungry again so we could eat. It was like killing time between meals.
Did you eat at the most famous beignet place down there along the river?
Yeah, Café du Monde. Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. Every morning, those good beignets that are kind of like you know, donuts just and piled with powdered sugar. So good.
It's
so
pretty
delicious.
Much sugar cooked in lard with sugar on top.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so good.
So good.
Yeah, those were really good. And so you had a great time there in New Orleans?
Oh, it was wonderful. It was wonderful. It's been several years since I've been down there. And so it was just really, it was a great, great getaway. And I had not been on vacation since, I think, my honeymoon almost 2 years ago. So it was delightful.
Well, that's terrific. And, of course, Leslie is with Horse Nation, and she is here to talk about a couple of the highlights from last week's postings. Well, actually, we haven't seen in a couple of weeks. But you started with one. We don't have tack for that, presented by Thinline. And tell us about that post.
Well, I mean, I think that we've all sort of seen this fashion trend on the rise. You know, it seems like everywhere you look in the outside world, the non-horsey world, women are wearing tights and tall boots, sort of riding boots. And so, you know, I think we've gotten, which actually really works in our favor, right, because we can go to the grocery store, we can go, you know, to a restaurant, and everyone just kind of thinks, oh, aren't they trendy, as long as they don't get too close and realize that we actually, you know, have, like, smell
bad. You know
what?
I was at Santa Anita this past weekend, and my husband commented on how many of the girls looked like they were riders because of the, you know, I'm in L.A., you know, and all the girls are wearing basically boots and half chaps, and I just kept saying, oh, they're a jockey. They must be a jockey. They must be a jockey. Because these freaking girls, I mean, like, very non-jockey-sized girls wearing boots and half chaps, like, I didn't get it.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. The half chap thing, I think, is sort of an even more recent development that we, you know, I think we've all seen a few pairs. I saw a pair at the mall over Christmas, and then one of somebody pointed out to us that Coach had just come out with what they were calling a convertible riding boot, which looked just like a like paddock boots and half chaps, and we're selling it for $500. So, so we posted that, and of course, readers got a kick out of it. They always do, you know. What are they imitating? What is the fashion world imitating this week of ours? But
If people start wearing bridles and saddles, I'm gonna lose it. If I go out to LA and people are wearing saddles at dinner, it's over.
It's over.
And then I did see that there is, speaking of something that goes on your boot or talking about your feet, is this for real?
This is for real.
Alarm?
I think,
I think Shara, our sales gal, she went to, where did she, I think she was she at, gosh, she saw them at Equina Center, I guess. This was at Ada that you guys were at. You guys want to see this? There were spurs. They look like Fisher-Price spurs, but they have a little processor that runs off of a watch battery inside them that measures your heel angle when your foot's on the stirrup. And when your heel comes up, it starts beeping, and it won't stop beeping until your heels are back down.
Wow. There's two things I think about for this, which is as an instructor, that's awesome because I'm so tired of telling children to put their heels down. The other part of it is, like, in my mind, what would George Morris say if I rolled up wearing that? What would George Morris say, Leslie?
I might put him out of business.
Doubtful. What
no,
would you
think
spurs, about
they were actually invented by the mother of a girl who took riding lessons, Kathy Phillips, who says she was, frankly, tired of paying someone to tell her daughter to keep her heels down.
Wow, because that's all instructors do, is just
that's
say,
it.
Put your heels down.
Kind of is, yeah.
Well,
for me.
That's right.
I just need a recording of someone screaming at me, heels down, heels down.
I saw this first at Ada, and Gina Miles was there, and I went over to Venture Gina Miles, and I went over to Gina, and I said, what do you think about this? And that's the first thing she said is she said, wow, I could just save my voice in half my lessons. So there you go.
There you go.
The trainer's dream. These weren't going to be cheap either. They were a couple hundred bucks or something, $150.
Seriously?
Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
it would get better if it
was.
As an instructor, if it would electrically shock the children with their heels caught.
Much more effective. You can learn to ignore beeping.
Yeah. Oh, you've taught too many riding lessons, I think.
I know, I'm getting a little jaded, aren't I? I'm like, shock them.
That's awesome. Electric shock therapy for the kids. That's a great idea.
Jamie's gonna have her own little new line of paddock boots out. It's going to have a little hole in the side for the probe that goes into your foot.
Yes. I think that's genius. And the other thing, it will be some sort of electroshock therapy to get their hands down and together. Seriously, why do kids feel like they need to drive a giant monster truck with their hands when they're holding reins? It's like, down and together. Put your hands down together. Heels down, hands down, heels down, hands down, heels down, hands down. I'm a broken record, and I need something to help me.
Well, here you go.
That's funny.
All right, and what else?
What else? So I left, left on vacation last week and just kind of handed the reins of Horse Nation over to a couple of our riders and was very excited to see what they would come up with. And one of the riders, Sally Spickard, she stumbled upon a very interesting Facebook page for the United States Cat Dressage Federation. It's a real thing.
Did you say
have,
cat dressage?
Cat dressage.
Kitty cat.
That's what I said, yep.
I must Google this.
Yeah, it's
I
a thing.
See this too.
It is a thing. It has like over 1,600 followers or likes. This page does, according to it's. It says the United States Cat Dressage Federation is the only national membership organization dedicated to the ancient art of cat dressage.
For some reason, I don't think the beast is going to qualify. I don't think he's going to be able to, he won't be able to hold it together. The whole staying inside the fence, forget that. He's going to be out of
there. Okay, Stephen Colbert would have a field day with this. He needs to be introduced.
Yeah.
He would, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, and it's a very active page. People posting photos of their cats, doing various dressage-y sort of things.
Well, you know what? The
pirouettes.
Those cats can do pirouettes. You know, they can do that. Air is above the ground, they can do. You know?
That's true.
They have
that
confidence.
Their backs are naturally sort of round. That's good for dressage.
That's true.
Let me ask you this. Let's be real.
You don't
real
have to worry
here
about vulture.
I've got to ask. Is cat dressage just a way for dressage DQs to entertain themselves with all the 17 cats that they have in their house?
Burn.
I'm serious. I'm asking.
We're running out of time here, Leslie. I think what's happening is Jamie's now got a sugar bug from all the chocolate tasting.
Yeah, sorry.
I do too. So one other before we let you go, I got to go over these real quick. I won't go over the details, but you can find it at horsenation.com. You posted my favorite last week as the five equestrian sports that aren't in the Winter Olympics but should be. The first one is mucking style, because that's why not, right, with your flex
right
and fork. Blanketing bonanza, because we've all gotten good at that this year. Sub-zero icebreaker. And I like that one. That one's pretty good. We all do that one. Extreme feed. You have to read what that one is on the blog. And ski joring. And I think ski joring probably does have a good shot at becoming an Olympic sport myself.
Maybe.
Someday.
Maybe someday.
All right. Thank you, Leslie. Good to talk
to
you again.
Okay, thanks, guys. Have a great week.
Thanks,
all
Leslie.
Right. See you. I do like ski joring. It's fun to watch. That I'd watch. Ice skating, where they go round and round and round over and over again, not so much.
Okay, there are literally people that are putting their cats in little tiny dressage arenas on this Facebook page. That's
really
crazy.
Are they actually
yes
doing something other than running around like cats?
I don't know. It's just still photos. There's no videos yet.
Are they riding them?
No, just I think they're using little laser beam pointers to get their cats to chase it.
Oh, well, there you go. There you go. That whole walk, trot, canter, getting the transitions is going to be tough.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, hey, I got to go. This baby is going
all
crazy.
Right.
There he is.
All right. Bye, baby. Bye, everybody. Don't forget, we'll be back here tomorrow morning with Endurance Day here on Horses in the Morning. Karen Chatton will be back. She'll be coming to us live from Las Vegas, I think. She's doing a ride right outside of Las Vegas. So she'll be here tomorrow morning, and Jamie will be back here. Already. Thank you for joining us, everybody. See ya. I got to go run around the block or something.
Yeah, me too. Stay neuter and geld.
The sugar thing.
Bye. With all this caffeine and chocolate.